I welcome you to this panel dealing with issues of relationship amongst students, university, university administrators, legal regimes, as an indication of the up-to-the-minute nature of the panel. Let me describe to you a press release dated Friday, March 29, 1996, that's right now, issued by the U.S. Department of Justice. Federal cyber sleuths armed with first-ever computer wiretap order net international hacker charged with illegally entering Harvard and U.S. military computers. Wonderful. Issued by the Department of Justice, this describes a prosecution that's being initiated against a man in Buenos Aires who hacked into the university's computer. Instead of operating on a consent theory, the government proceeded with a wiretap order. Explained this way, law enforcement agencies have done electronic surveillance on computer systems in the past with the consent of the users. Court authorization was deemed necessary in this case because the Harvard computer system does not post a banner informing users who log onto the system that their communications might be monitored. This is an example of how the Fourth Amendment and a court order can be used to protect rights while adapting to modern technology, said Attorney General Reno. This is doing it the right way, she said. We are using a traditional court order and new technology to defeat a criminal while protecting individual rights and constitutional principles that are important to all Americans. Janet Reno. Now let me briefly introduce to you the members of the panel, I'll be extremely brief with it. Starting on your left, Harvey Silverglade. Harvey is a partner at the Boston law firm of Silverglade & Good. He specializes in criminal defense and civil liberties work. He's recently defended with Andy Good, David LaMacchia. Next to Harvey is Peter Torin. Peter is with the Computer Crime Unit of the U.S. Department of Justice, the Criminal Division. He initiated the first of prosecutions for theft of trade secrets. Next to him is Greg Jackson. Greg is the MIT Director of Academic Computing and newly appointed Associate Provost for Information Technology at the University of Chicago. In the center, Ricky Kleeman. Ricky is an anchor at Court TV in New York and remains counsel to the Boston firm of Kleeman Lyons, Schindler, Gross, and Pabian. She teaches trial advocacy at Greg Spence's Trial Lawyers College, the National Criminal Defense College, and at Harvard Law School, among others. She was a professor at Boston University School of Law, served on the advisory committee of the United States Supreme Court on the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, and is an old friend. Hello, Ricky. And to her left, your right, Declan McCullough. Declan was president of the student body at Carnegie Mellon University for the 1994-1995 academic year. Declan runs the Justice on Campus project based at MIT, and he is a plaintiff in the ACLU-EFF lawsuit challenging the CDA, and his accounts of the proceedings are available on the EPIC website, and they're terrific. Next is Jeff Swope. Jeff is a partner in the Boston law firm of Palmer and Dodge and represents MIT as outside counsel and other universities. And finally, Jonathan Scheel. Jonathan was an assistant United States attorney in Boston until 1994, chief of the criminal division, and was the supervising attorney in the bringing of the LaMacchia case. He's currently in private practice with the Boston law firm of Choate, Hall & Stewart. And as moderator, I'd like to introduce my colleague, and friend Arthur Miller. Arthur is a person with deep roots in the law of privacy, having authored books and articles on the subject going way back. Also deeply into the law of copyright, member of the Cantu Commission and a continuing critic in that field. And Arthur also co-teaches with me a seminar at Harvard Law School on internet and society. Arthur, I turn this panel over to you. Would you please welcome?
Thank you, Charlie. This panel has been working very, very hard to prepare for this session. We must have spent at least 4 minutes on this during the break. And the reason why we spent all that time is that we believe in preparing for something that is completely improvised and spontaneous. What we are going to do is go into a hypothetical world in which things happen. Now, there are no hypotheticals. As Charlie's reading the indictment tells you, anything the human mind can conceive of has already happened, is happening as we sit here, or will happen tomorrow. And I'm going to describe little vignettes or fact patterns and ask this distinguished panel their reactions and to play roles. It's all hypothetical, but it is all very real. Ready, panel? I don't know. You have that pet rock demeanor. Ricky, you're an ace reporter for a TV station in a metropolitan area, and your news director says to you that they'd like to do a series. They've heard stories and rumors that at the U, where they have this extraordinary technology and online activity and connections to the net and the web and all that lingo, things may be going on that aren't fit to be done at a university. So your news director wants you to look into that. You like that story? That possibility?
I like that possibility.
Why?
Well, I think that it's newsworthy of the day.
What do you mean, newsworthy of the day? What does that mean?
Well, I think that people are always curious about crime. And crime has now taken on a new picture. That it was one thing to look at cops and robbers and people who stole something, but now people can steal things that come right out of your mind. So I think it's a good story. But when I start to go look into it, I have to find a good informant for you.
I've got one for you.
Great.
It turns out that you've got an intern from the U, from their school of journalism. And the intern says, boy, I'm glad you're doing that story because a lot is going on over there. And she says to you, you want me to get you in?
And the answer is, of course.
Are you authorized to get in?
I may not be authorized to get in, but perhaps she's authorized to get in.
She says, well, look, I think you should look at some of the email groups that they've got over there. They've got these groups of students who email back and forth to each other. I'm not authorized to get in, but I can hack my way in.
Oh, I'm fine if she hacks her way in.
You think that gives you some cover?
No, not necessarily, but it makes me feel a little better when I go to sleep at night.
In other words, you'd rather be a receiver of stolen goods than the actual thief.
Well, it's all information.
It's all
I'm in the information business.
she gets you in, Ricky, and you find that you're in a group that seems to consist of 8, 10, 12 students going back and forth. All men, apparently. This seems to be an all-male e-group.
Just my kind of group.
I'm not going to touch that line. In fact, they sort of call themselves the politically incorrect.
Well, maybe it wasn't just my kind of group, but go ahead.
And what they're doing is discussing the sexy co-eds on campus. I mean, you know what I mean by discussing.
Yes, I think I got it.
This is a story?
I think it's a story, and I think it's a story because it infuriates people on one side of the issue. And it certainly might infuriate a lot of women to know that they are the subjects of this kind of quote-unquote discussion. And then on the other side of the issue, you have people saying, hey, it's information. I can talk, write, print, communicate with whomever I choose to. And if it becomes a public story, well, maybe that's just the risk that I took by going out into the computer world.
Now, Declan, you're a member of the politically incorrect. What do you think of Ricky's attitude, that she can just sort of hack her way in and do a news story?
I don't like it. The problem is, here, it's a private discussion group. It's just like me hanging out in the dorm room or the fraternity house with a bunch of other guys, and we're having a private conversation, and your intern is going to have to hack your way into our conversation. And so you're basically eavesdropping on our dorm room or fraternity house conversation, and that's unethical. I don't think you should be doing that as a reporter.
I mean, you did electronically put it out there, Declan.
Is it a private discussion group or is it public?
Mm-hmm. Greg, you're shaking your head.
Well, it's not. They're having this conversation sitting around the fraternity house, and someone walks outside the window and hears the conversation and gets offended by it. That's their problem, not the person who walked by's problem.
But they're breaking in. This is remember, we use the phrase hacking your way in. So it's not casual eavesdropping. This is a concerted attempt to invade our privacy. And additionally, I want to make a broader point, and that's, just because it's happening in cyber doesn't mean that it's necessarily newsworthy. If the same discussions are happening in the fraternity house, no one would care. So just the fact that it has the word internet attached doesn't mean that you should be doing a story.
Well, I might like it even if it was happening in the fraternity house. I mean, women shouldn't be the subject of these kinds of discussions, and if I can get my way in there to publish it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, but I bet it would have been easier for you to get into the fraternity house to do this, and you've never tried to do that. It wasn't until the internet angle came along that it became interesting.
Well, is there something unique about a debate about women on campus that's occurring electronically versus occurring in what used to be a smoke-filled fraternity room?
Well,
now is neither smoke-filled nor a fraternity, I assume.
Well, of course, if the truth be said by both of the gentlemen on either side of me, it does become more intriguing and more newsworthy simply because it's being done through communication by computers. Because this is something that much of the world outside of this room doesn't really know a lot about. So it's interesting.
So what's the hook on the story? Is your story about male chauvinist pigs at the U? Is it about the electronics? Is it about the way people in the middle of an expensive educational experience are wasting their lives? I mean, what, as a viewer, what are you going to tell me at 11 o'clock tonight?
Well, I think the hook is, look what these men are up to using their computers. So it's both one and two. Using it for the sexism, and it's the fact that it's happening through computers. And I think that's newsworthy.
I think the newsworthiness of the story is the hacking in. I think the other is run-of-the-mill thing. I think the newsworthiness is the illegal use of getting into the computer.
Peter, in other words, if you were at KRAP, the competing channel, you would do a story on the lack of ethics across the street.
perhaps a criminal behavior of across the street.
No. Do you think what Ricky is doing is criminal?
Possibly, certainly. It could very well be that hacking into a computer on those facts that you've given us could very well be illegal.
She brought me the story. It wasn't my fault.
I think Harvey could do better in terms of a defense. I think Harvey could
do
better.
What do you think about that, Jonathan?
I think it's below the radar screen as a criminal matter.
Why?
It's not
because she's going to squeal First Amendment as soon as you threaten her?
The difficulty of the case would be an interesting factor, but I just think it's below the radar screen. That is to say, it's wrong. It shouldn't be done. It ought to be KRAT should put it out on the air as an unethical kind of conduct. It doesn't warrant, on those facts, criminal treatment.
Well, I was going to ask Ricky what she would say if you hacked into a women's group.
And they were talking about men?
And they were talking about men.
Same story.
It's still a sexism story?
Well, it's a use of the computer and what in sexism story. I mean, I think it is the fact that it's the use of the communication through computer that is not known by the rest of the world. So that's what makes it new.
But why is it a big deal to use the computer and not to use the dormitory lounge, both of which are U facilities? What's the big difference between the electronic and the non-electronic?
Simply that one's more newsworthy than the other. The other is an old story.
This is a new story. Now, in writing or projecting this story on the evening news, are you going to identify the students?
I don't see why not. I don't see that I have any reason to keep their identities private if I'm going forward with this story.
How do you know who they are?
I only know who they are by what I see on the computer screen.
And because it's on the computer screen, that means it's true?
Well, I don't have to know if ultimately underneath it it's something else, but this is what I observe.
But say one of the participants is Arthur Miller, and you have the email message that says that one of these participants. Do you now go put that up and say Arthur Miller said this?
I'd say the person who identified himself as Arthur Miller said this. And then, of course, I have to talk to the lawyers for the station before I find out I'm getting ready to be liable for libel.
Now, Declan, is it worse or not that she may identify you?
If I may...
Describing your date last night.
I don't want it. I'm sitting here chatting with my friends in the online equivalent of my dormitory lounge, and then she bugs the dorm lounge and then reports on it. I have severe problems with that, and who knows if it's actually me using my computer account. It could be a forged post, forged email, or someone could have borrowed my account or hacked into it. And so putting my name attached to this hot date I had last night, it just...
Who said it was hot?
Date.
Well, this may suggest that journalists have to engage in a revision of their practices for confirmation. In other words, she may have to confirm that the person using your name is your name. Would you identify, assuming that the politically incorrect are discussing the most beautiful, sexiest poet, let's suppose they had a vote and they elect Deborah Dallas as the sexiest woman at the U, would you report that?
Yes.
You'd report that. You think this is no different than the California primary, huh?
I wouldn't quite put it like that. But if I'm in a different kind of the information business, that is, my work as a journalist is to bring out the story to the public, once I could, as you say, confirm the details, particularly the identities, why not report who was the subject of what they said? That's really part of the story.
Deborah is very upset. She is very upset. And she goes to you, Greg, in your role as the Dean of Students. And she says, This is all an outrage, and what's particularly an outrage is that these 10 male students are engaging in this activity. I want you to stop it. Stop it!
I probably can't stop it.
Why not?
Well, first of all, they're probably not doing anything that's against a rule at this point. I mean, you could stretch, you could say, yes, they're using my network for something that's not what we intended it for, but that's a bit of a stretch. We may have a policy someplace that says male students may not gather and discuss female students, but I bet we don't have a policy like that. And probably...
That would kill the admissions policy.
Well, they don't announce this in the catalog office. That's something you learn after you get there.
It's only after you pay tuition, right, Harvey?
Most policies we might have that would make this against a rule would have that same effect of turning this into not a university but something very different. And so what I'll say to her, we may not be able to make them stop, but let's try and see if we can make them stop.
And what do you mean by that?
Well,
flannel mouth.
It means I might. Well, now I know that Declan is one of these characters, and I might correspond with Declan and say, "Hey, Declan, you guys appear to be having this discussion online, and it appears to have leaked out, so lots of people know about this now. This is really offending one of your classmates at the university. Is that really what you want to be doing as a student at this university? Is that the image that you want to be projecting? Is that what you guys want to be up to?" Now, one of two things might happen. He might say, yep.
Well, let's hear what he'd say.
All right, what's he going to say?
I'm going to say, Greg, I'm sorry, but this is offensive speech. It's protected speech, and I'm not harassing her. I'm not intimidating her. This is a private forum. It leaked out. Now it's plastered all over the women's discussion groups, the women's center discussion groups. But shucks, I mean, we got a right to do this.
Well, you might be harassing her, actually. It depends how far this has been plastered. I mean, the only thing is that Ricky's got this story buried on the 1:45 a.m. news about the internet.
Not my story.
That's why, but if it's really plastered over the walls and everyone knows this, Debbie's having a lot of trouble in classes right now. Because when she walks in, people are giving her grief. It's disrupting all her classes. She's not able to learn anymore. And university policy probably says if things that you're saying about her are causing it to be impossible for her to do her schoolwork, that under our policy, you might well be harassing her.
Now, let's suppose there is a code of conduct, one of those amorphously drafted things that universities find useful these days. It uses words like harass, intimidate, coerce. He cutting any ice with you?
Nope. My reason in response would be, hey, we're not intending to harass. This was a private discussion. This is in our dormitory lounge, equivalent in cyberspace, and we're just chatting. The problem is it leaked out. It's on the news now. It's on the women's discussion groups, and there's a bit of a furor about this. But the problem is, look at our intent. Our intent was not to harass.
But we're not trying to punish you for this. That's not the issue.
And what are you trying to do?
I just want you not to do it again. That's all. All I'm asking you is in the future, now that you understand that this can happen and that it will have all kinds of consequences you didn't intend, maybe you will think again before you do something like this. That's all I ask. I mean, you're absolutely right that a lot of this stuff may well be protected. You didn't mean to cause her all this difficulty.
So you admit it's protected speech, but you're also...
I said it may be.
It may be protected. It may be protected speech, but you're also trying to get...
I don't want to pay all these guys all day long to fight about whether it's protected speech.
All he wants to do is gag you for the rest of your life.
Right.
What's the big deal?
On this topic.
So I say, Greg, thanks, but no thanks. I actually like the publicity. I'm getting quoted, and I'm actually meeting a lot of people this way. This is not bad. So Greg, no thanks, but no thanks. I'm not
I'd like to know who you're meeting as a result of that. Now, Jonathan, you recently left the government, therefore you're very hungry for clients.
Very concerned about their rights.
Mm. And if... Lawyers have a way with words, don't they? Suppose Deborah comes in to see you and recounts all this and says,
I'm getting no satisfaction from the U or from Declan. Is there anything you can do for me?
Well, I think we can entertain possibly bringing lawsuits against the university and against Declan and his friends, injunctive relief against Declan and his friends, highly irresponsible behavior on the part of the reporter, perhaps criminal behavior on the part of the reporter. I'd run over to Peter Torin. I say, Peter, this should be on your radar screen. It's an outrage.
Lawyers speak with four tongues. Let me just hold you there. And Peters, you see anything criminal here? Anything prosecute?
For the free speech or for what the reporter did to begin with?
For what the reporter did, the failure of the university to control Declan, Declan's use of...
Certainly not from the failure of the university to control Declan. Perhaps of how the reporter obtained that information might be a criminal offense. Yeah.
So you're not holding out much hope?
For the victim in this
case?
For
the victim.
Not really.
I mean, she is really saying, I am emotionally distressed, I have been harassed, I've been oppressed, I've been insulted, I've been degraded.
That's what they pay high-priced civil attorneys
to. Oh, so we're back to Jonathan.
To get involved with.
All right, but the criminal door seems closed. What's some of the lingo you might use in terms of a civil action?
Well, no question about it. I mean, she has lost her ability to enjoy the freedom that she had before this incident occurred. It's a combination of the irresponsible reporting, the university failing to supervise properly what goes on its computer system. Not a winner, but... and, of course, Declan's own behavior. I would want I'd want injunctive relief. I'd want, that is to say, enjoin, prevent Declan and his crew from doing it. The university be required to enforce a code of ethics, which says that this is a demeaning kind of behavior, and that regardless of the First Amendment rights, the university ought to make it clear to students this is not appropriate behavior, and follow the sanctions that they should follow within the university. But I'd be looking for big dollars, very big dollars, absolutely.
This is why court dockets are 85 years behind.
Jeff, as counsel for this hypothetical university?
Not worried yet.
You're not worried yet? Why not?
Well, none of this, as we pointed out, was intended to be released, so it is no different from the private conversation. It was an inadvertent release. Now, what I'd worry about is if I found out later that the same conversation was posted on a bulletin board that only certain people knew how to find, but it was public. Then I'd start to worry for the university.
But as long as this is really a closed discussion group?
It's not closed. There will be records of the email, conceivably. I'll put a discovery request to the university for all of its document retention policy with respect to email. All the discussion about Deborah will be available for people who know how to get into those records. That's a lifelong mark on her that the university is allowed to create.
Jeff, how can you be so confident when Ricky's intern hacked her way into the system at the drop of a smile?
Well, Greg tells me that we've got a system that's got all of the latest protections. You can't ensure perfection, but we're state-of-the-art.
You say that confidently. Have you checked the system?
I wouldn't know a system from... a hole in the wall, but I would know...
The only system you know is a billing system.
I do have that down pretty well. But I rely on Greg, and he's the best there is.
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting, thinking about the impact of all of this on the way universities operate and the way lawyers advise universities. Doesn't it sort of suggest to you that you suggest to your client a form of prophylaxis that they do this?
I think in this case I would certainly suggest that the university write to the station, to Ricky's employer, and tell them in straight words that they think this is unprofessional behavior, and that if it happens again, they're going to take appropriate action.
I mean, Deborah was the victim of an assault. Does the media normally print names of assault victims? I would say probably not. This sounds like a problem there. On the other hand, I don't think the university is off the hook.
You don't?
I don't think they're off the hook by any means. Deborah is, her life has been changed, maybe ruined. She may have to transfer.
But how can you lay that at the feet of either the university or Declan if it's a reasonably secure, not perfect, no system is perfect, reasonably secure, and these guys really thought they were engaged in a form of private communication?
Because reasonably secure is only reasonable before it is breached. And once it's breached, it's foreseeable, in my view. It was foreseeable that this kind of information could have been hacked into and disseminated. The university has to be conscious of that. And I think, again, it goes to whatever codes of student conduct there should be. And if they're not there, that's a problem. If they are there and they're not enforced, that's a problem.
Listening to him, does it suggest to you that the nature of the system has to be reevaluated, the nature of the communications on the system that should be permitted, the rules of engagement, so to speak?
Well, we need to look closely at someone we haven't talked about much yet, and that's Ricky's intern. Hacked In covers a whole lot of territory, and one thing, she might have actually found something that is a hole in our system. And I think at that point, we really do need to say if there's an obvious hole that we can reasonably fill, that it's our obligation to really try to fill it. That's something we should learn from this. I think up until we know about it, it's hard to expect us to sort of fill all holes that might. But once we know that there's a reasonable hole that reasonable people can go through. Now, my guess is that's not what she did. My guess is she has a friend among the politically incorrect who's been copying the mail and showing it to her. That's not our doing. Well, that person's doing.
I don't want to say words out of Jonathan's mouth, but I would think that if you can conjure up that possibility, it suggests that you should close that possibility somehow.
Well, we can't keep people from, actually, we can't keep people from copying mail and send it to other people. We can't keep people from sending mail of any sort, except by simply locking them out completely and saying you may not send mail. Once we tell someone you may send email, we can do nothing to prevent them sending particular kinds of email to anybody.
Let me press
on. We may be able to punish them afterwards, but we cannot prevent them from doing
it. Why is it impossible for a university to address its population of employees, faculty, and students and say, we have this email system. We want to promote communication in this environment. But we are telling you at the front end, the following subjects are not to be addressed on this email system.
Well, we can do that. In fact, we say something like that. We say all of our telecommunications facilities are to be used for university purposes. Mm. Now, that's a vague term.
Oh,
who knows what that means?
Yeah.
But we could make a more concrete list of things like that. But you can make lists until you're blue.
Harvey, I sense you're about to spring.
I am about to spring.
I knew it.
First of all, here we are at the end of the 20th century talking about whether there is some violation committed by students who are having basically a bull session using their computers. And we're wondering how many millions of dollars the young lady is going to get and how many criminal cases or civil cases can be made out of it. It really is the ultimate of making mountains out of molehills. But aside from that, the truth is that there are policies at the university that would probably be violated by such a discussion. That's what's so startling. Universities do have rules that these systems have to be devoted to promoting the mission of the university. They're worded in various ways, but that's the idea. That gives administrators the power to discipline students who are talking to each other, and the talk is not of a sufficiently high intellectual caliber to satisfy the administration. So they are not using the computer system in the way that they're supposed to be. That is to say, they're using it to conduct free speech. The content of this particular conversation, I have no doubt, would be considered sex harassment on many campuses, even though there was no intention of the woman ever hearing it. I've had several cases at major universities raising precisely that problem. Women inadvertently is told that the boys are talking about her. And there we have lawsuits, court cases, disciplinary cases before the Court of Star Chamber.
And you get clients.
I must say I'd rather not have clients who are being charged with that kind of crime. It makes me very nervous as a free citizen.
You but prefer murders and rapes.
I do prefer murders, yeah. They're cleaner. However, the boys are in danger here, no doubt about it. I think that the reporter is in a bit of danger also. You know, sometimes we do get the messenger if we don't like the message. So, you know, the whole crew could end up, with the exception of the victim, who has her own punishment. She has to live the rest of her life with the burden of having been talked about.
All right, let's get Ricky on to the next possible installment of her multi-part series. There's a student at the U, an unbelievably gifted student named Gary. Gary is up for a Rhodes Scholarship. He's thinking of going to the Yale Law School. He does not have perfect judgment, but that's what he's thinking of doing. He's also a computer nut, and he has a web page, and it's called the Unofficial Idyllia U Homepage. And it seems he's doing two things. Every day, he writes sort of a lampoon of the university. One of the basic message of this sort of Doonesbury-like thing is, at the U, the only thing that people care about is football and sex. Every day there's a column. The other aspect of this particular homepage is something he calls hot links, in which each day he gives you, if you dial in, a hot link to a place where you will find explicit sex talk or possibly some visuals. This a story?
Oh, I think it's a story, no doubt about it, especially if the guy's going to go to the Yale.
Ricky never met a story she didn't like.
Sure, it's a story. And again, it's a story that today is very newsworthy, because regardless of what side you're on, regardless of the pros and cons, you've got a lot of competing interests in this story. You have legislation that's out there that's trying to curb use of communication via computers, dealing with the issue of decency. You have a guy who is obviously he's boldly there, even in somewhat of a business there, of getting people to get to what some might consider to be indecent material. I don't care if he's doing it from the U, that's just another factor that will lead to what the university is going to do, but sure, it's a story.
What do you think your tagline is going to be on this story? What's the message, other than the descriptive stuff of what Gary is doing?
Hot sex, find it here.
Or is this what your tuition dollars are going for? Now, Greg, this story hits. This is on the 11 o'clock news. You come in as dean of students, or provost, or president of the U. Dream on, dream on.
That's a nightmare, not a dream.
Your phone is ringing off the hook. It's alums, very agitated.
They all want the address of this web.
How do you react to this?
Not an issue.
Not an issue? Not an issue? What does that mean, not an issue?
It means he doesn't want to be president of the university.
Yeah.
this is someone, I mean, doing stuff which I happen to think is stupid and a waste of time, but what he, Gary, is that who this is?
Yeah.
What he's doing is wasting his own time. I mean, he may be using a minimal amount of our resources, but no more than he might use for a bull session at the fraternity. It's just, there's not an issue. It's not, there's nothing that seems to me to violate any university policy that I know of. It's stupidity, and we don't have a policy against stupidity.
So, is that what you tell the alums that are calling in?
Right.
You happy with that response, or lack thereof?
Well, I would have been happy until the recent statute was passed. And once that statute passed, I suspect I'd call Greg and say, gee, I read in the paper that you said not a big deal, and I'm not so sure it's not a big deal.
Why do you think it might be a big deal?
Well, I need to know who's publishing what in this case. Is this Gary the provider of this material, or is he just providing addresses for people to go look at things? Mm-hmm. If he's the provider, then the university may have some responsibility to do something.
And if he's just publishing addresses where you can find this stuff?
I think that's still okay.
Still okay? Mr. Prosecutor, you think it's still okay?
I think whether the question would be whether to what extent it was under control of the university and what steps they could take to curtail that type of activity. And once they had knowledge of what was being done, I think that it does put them on notice and it does change the ballgame. So I'm not quite sure if it would be the answer that it would be okay. I'm not quite sure that that's correct.
There seem to be a lot of ambiguity here.
I don't want this stuff on my machines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this stuff on my machines. If he's putting it on my machines, then I'll take it off my machines. But my guess is he'll just then put it on his own machine. And we may be carrying it some of the way, but then again, so was the thing that carried it to Ricky's desk, and so were any number of other people, and that is what I think is beneath the radar.
Peter did ask what level of control you have over what Gary is using.
If it's on his own machine, I don't have any control over it at all, really.
To the extent that he's using the network, the university server, to access the other sites, wherever they may be, there might be more control over his conduct than just saying that if he's using his own machine, it's okay.
Or, in effect, providing an attractive nuisance for other students to use the university server to gain access to the link points. Mr. Lawyer?
Well, the problem is, I'd remind Greg that a year ago we had a student who was using his own machine to run a commercial business out of his dorm room, and we shut the kid down. We denied him access. So how come we don't have control over this kid's machine?
We actually have an explicit policy about commercial access, about commercial activity using university facilities.
And it does show we have control, and that's my concern.
Greg, why do I have this sense about you that you're very Talmudic? That you're always looking for an explicit policy as opposed to asking yourself what's right and what's wrong here. That's in the abstract.
Well, partly I may not want to be president, but I do want to keep my job.
Aha.
And
so this is a CYA operation?
Well, and part of my job is to try to make sure that policies bear some resemblance to what's right and wrong. And not all of the university's policies do I like, but an awful lot of them I think correspond pretty well. And if I sit there and worry all the time about what I think is right and wrong as the first thing I do, then I'm not doing my job. Ricky can do that because she doesn't work for us. But
and Declan, how about you? This is not you. Gary may be your roommate, your friend, who knows? You know what he's doing.
What do I think of it?
Yeah.
The universe, unless there's a criminal activity, and it's very clearly a criminal activity, the university shouldn't control student speech, including what I have or my roommate has on our personal computers in our dorm room that are hooked up to the university's network.
Short of criminality?
Explicit criminality.
Explicit criminality, as opposed to mere criminality.
if there's doubt, err on the side of free expression.
Well, Mr. Dean, remember, Gary's doing two things. He's got that lampooning segment.
Right.
And one of the profs from the English department comes to see you and says, now look it.
He lampooned me yesterday. He lampooned my sexuality or lack thereof in a way that's clearly identifiable in this university community. Everyone who sees this knows he's talking about me. And he's got things in there about pigs and, heaven forfend, one of my colleagues. And you've got to stop that.
Well, the first question is, why is he coming to me? What am I, the dean of?
That actually happened.
Changing my job, and so this is it.
Greg, are you having an identity crisis?
Absolutely.
No, you're Mr. Big.
I'm Mr. Big. Well, the question is, what is the procedure for something like this if it hadn't happened electronically? And by and large, the answer is going to be, first, have you told him to stop?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say, first of all, have you gone and asked this guy to stop talking about you and pigs?
He won't do a thing.
He won't do a thing.
I sent him an email, and he won't do a thing.
And Ricky published it. But, well, then we have standard practices in the university to deal with this, and we're not going to invent a special one just because it's electronic. Now, I always get a little bit confused about what those practices are, because in my experience, the university has very well-stated, vague policies about these kinds of things. And exactly what someone does when there's what amounts to a dispute between two people that happens to be at the university is it gets very confused about, is this a university matter or should they go fight it out in court? And I'm not real sure about what I'd tell them about that. It's not clear to me why they're having this flat and whether it's about the university and whether it's about us at all. I think.
Well, understand.
I don't want it to be about the university, so I'm going to try to get these guys to go sue each other out in court and not drag some university process that's designed to deal with cheating on a test into something that's about someone pissed off about an ex-girlfriend.
Are you happy with this? Here's a member of the faculty who is being lampooned in a highly derogatory and, in his judgment, exceedingly offensive way by a student.
He can bring a private civil action, and Greg's just right, this isn't the university isn't the only place he can go. If he wants to bring a complaint within the university, there are policies that and procedures that permit him to do that, but if he wants to recover any money, he can go to court.
Well, he wants
well,
to
what's
stop.
What's the private cause of action, unless it's untrue, in which case it's defamation. But if it's true, what
the
is private
pig
cause of
is
action?
Unavailable for comment.
Pig has no standing.
I think it is a violation of the racketeering laws. I just haven't figured it out just yet.
Now, Greg and Jeff.
Great universities are predicated on people saying offensive things about one another.
Within the community?
Very often. I don't like a lot of those things. I receive a lot of them. Colleagues receive a lot of them. It's not fun. We probably all dish them out, sometimes aware of it, sometimes not.
Are you from a real university?
Peter?
I was going to say, I think, though, there's a fundamental difference that Greg glossed over between if this looking right away to see how it would work in a non-electronic environment, because I think there are fundamental differences between if this went out over electronic communications versus somebody standing on the quad handing out pieces of paper saying the exact same thing. I mean, it's a completely different ballgame. First of all, the audience of who's going to read it. I mean, assuming that the email system or the website or whatever is open to the public at large, anybody can see this. The neighbor of the professor can read about his exploits with this pig. Anybody. It's just a totally new game, and to just look right away at the paper world, I don't think is a correct or probably isn't going to be hold water in all respects.
Now, where does that leave you? Is there a criminal prosecution here?
Not so far.
Not so far? even though some of the people who read this are under 18, and they are given explicit descriptions of a pig's anatomy.
Well, as you're rephrasing it, I think it's possibly leading in that direction, that there possibly could be.
I mean, what did the Congress of the United States intend when they enacted that jewel of a statute?
I can't comment on that.
You're presuming rational intent also.
In your prosecutorial garb, above or below the radar screen?
Way below. Unless it's a link.
You have to assume, let's remind ourselves, that half to two-thirds of the freshman class are below 18.
Not a problem. I mean, if the link is to child pornography, then we're in a totally different ballgame. But otherwise, I think you're talking about an issue that it's hard to see how you can make a criminal case out of it at all. It's free speech, and it ought to be treated as free speech, and it might be offensive, but that's not a reason to make it criminal.
And if it's false, then
check
your wannabe client says, I have never done it with a pig.
Putting on the civil hat for the moment, first of all, I wouldn't take the case on a contingency. I'd see if Harvey was available. It seems not hopeful at all. It's the rough and tumble of discussion. It could get to a point where it was highly offensive, highly personal, revealing details that in fact have a tremendously deleterious effect on this professor and so on. But hard to find a theory of liability that makes sense.
Well, I'll ask the university again. Accepting the rough and tumble of academic life, is this part of it?
Well, it shouldn't be, but it is. This is not to say we wouldn't try to go get this person to stop doing this. But, we already tried this with Declan, and he blew us off. And the odds are this person is going to blow us off, too. And I think we have an obligation to try to be more civil and try to get people to be...
Does the word impotence seem applicable to this university?
Or to the professor?
In terms of getting people to be quiet, yes, I think we're pretty much impotent. We may be able to do things about things that people have said, but we can't stop them from saying them. Mm-hmm. And
if this gets highly publicized, if conduct continues, if the lampooning is more and more offensive, alums start reducing contributions to the university, members of the faculty think life at Siwash U is a little more attractive. Isn't there a point of self-preservation here for the university?
There is, but it's not about the electronic policy. I mean, we have a university that has gone haywire if this is exactly the kind of behavior that it's tolerating socially. The problem is much deeper than one of what I'm going to do as the dean about this particular case. A lot of these things need to self-correct. One of the things one is tempted to do is embarrass the person who's being such an idiot. Now, I can't go do that, but other people may well. And if there hasn't been a whole lot of discussion about the stupidity and offensiveness of this website, then there's something very wrong with our place.
I beg to differ with the view here that this is not an arguable violation of the new telecommunications law. I think it could very well be a violation, particularly if the pig had fun. Now, it may be below Jonathan Cheel's...
I'm trying to get a principle out of the pig had fun.
I'm afraid that's the principle, Arthur. Because, you see, I think it may very well qualify as indecent. But your description of what the English professor is doing with the pig, I think that it's arguably indecent. I think, and if children have access to it, I think it is an arguable violation. I'm not saying that it would be a constitutional prosecution there, but that's a defense. Is it below the screen? I think it probably is below Jonathan's screen, but if we were in Memphis, I think they had the lowest screen in Memphis.
Absolutely right.
I'd be worried if this was the University of Tennessee.
And of course, it's accessible in Memphis.
Yep.
Correct.
But you know, Arthur, if the professor did come up with that retainer, I think I am starting to see a pattern of behavior on the part of the university that's very disturbing. it's coming to me now. they don't take steps that would foresee behavior that goes from the sort of rough and tumble of regular academia into highly offensive, highly damaging behavior. And at least that's the description we've gotten so far from the university. They are just going to take a hands-off policy. I start to see maybe a cause of action, some kind of negligent behavior on the part of the university. I like it. There's a pattern.
It has a ring.
It has, yeah.
There also might be problems if we're talking about just the written word versus morphed pictures of the professor and the pig. Mm. That might change the situation a little bit.
Yes, in a way so that you could identify which professor it was.
Or the pig.
Or the pig.
By the time this is over, the animal rights groups will be suing.
Greg, one more question about this little scenario. Now, there you are, Mr. Big, fending off the alums, telling them this is free speech, right? Free speech. This is what a university...
That's why you're so rich today. We let you do this.
On your desk are two letters. One is to the Rhodes Scholarship Committee, and the other is to Yale Law School. And it's about Greg and his application for the Rhodes Scholarship and his application
He's changed his name now to?
Garrett. I see. In spite of your liberality, you do not wish to be identified. There are those letters of recommendation that you've been asked to write. Do you rewrite them? Or do you just laud Gary's academic performance?
If I've been asked to write these personally as someone who knows him, I'm going to speak about what he did. I think he's being stupid, and I think these folks have a right to know that he's being stupid. But that's me now talking as a referee. Hmm. I don't like anything that this guy did. I don't want him being rewarded for it. And I think this pattern of behavior on his part is something that I can tell other people about. And they can then judge what they want to do with that information. If all I'm doing is confirming his enrollment at the university and whether he's ever been expelled, then I have to say he's enrolled at the university, hasn't been expelled. And I can't say there is this thing people wish we had prosecuted him for, and I should tell you about that.
Rewrite the letters to Harvard Law School.
So let's see. It may well come to pass that the letter of recommendation of the future will embrace the student's web activities?
It might have a link to his page in it.
You like that, Declan?
It is his page.
He's willing to give you all the free speech your tuition money will buy. But he will squeal like the proverbial stuffed pig to the Rhodes Committee and to Yale.
That's a tough one. There's my first response would be like, you bastard. I mean, what the hell do you think you're doing? You said you were going to give me a good recommendation, and then a week later, after this hits the 11 o'clock news, you turn around and you say that I'm an irresponsible student and shouldn't be accepted. But
no, I didn't say that. I said I'll give them the link to your webpage.
Okay. Well, you also said that you disapproved, et cetera, but, okay. A link to my webpage, as long as, if you're going to do this, just tell me about it, let me know what's going on, and so then I can at least put something, either kill the webpage, or if it's too late, put something up on the webpage saying, this is what happened, and I'll hope that...
So you can control what I say, but I can't control what you say, is that...
I'd hope that you'll tell me that you're going to do this.
But I hope that you would stop doing this when I asked you to do it.
We may get these two fighting before 12:30.
I've got a much better news story now.
And pretty soon I'm going to be talking to Harvey and say, Harvey, is this defamation? What's going on here? Do I have a cause of action against the university?
What do you think, Corporal?
Interference with advantageous relationships or something? I think the problem is, Declan, that you made your reputation as a promoter of free speech. One of the things about free speech is we all have to live with the consequences of what we speak. So I'm afraid you find yourself another lawyer, Declan.
Ever ready Jonathan is here.
This might be the first conflict in history that really would keep me from taking the case. I'm conflicted out. But it would be hard for me to see how if the professor wanted to hold you responsible, Declan, for your speech, you come back with this suit saying, I can't be held responsible.
Now, let's try one other little vignette. There's yet one other segment you've got to produce, Ricky. And as a result of the notoriety that the two preceding segments have gotten, a very, very upright young man appears in your office. He's Dudley Do-Right. It turns out that he's a computer repair specialist. And he has been working on the computer of a student at the U, and he has discovered on the hard disk the most unbelievable collection of kiddie porn. Story?
He's just simply discovered it.
He's working on the computer. Let's put him in a little company or a computer repair unit inside the U, and just servicing the student's computer.
Well, I think I need more than just that. I mean, that gets my juices flowing, right? That there's something going on there. But nonetheless,
juice is that?
Oh, it's the journalism juice.
Okay.
If someone has kiddie porn, the question is, what is he doing with it? The other question is, how did he get it? But if he simply has it, I don't know that I have a story, but I think I might have a story if I find out that he's been systematically getting it, or more important, he's been systematically giving it or selling it away.
Now, that's a very interesting analysis. You seem to be worried, but you don't know where to go with it.
Well, it's not so much that I'm worried. I don't know that it's newsworthy. I mean, I'm not worried. The guy discovered it. He discovered it inadvertently. He's a repairman. He hasn't done anything illegal to have discovered it. But I don't know what I've got. I don't know if someone had their own pornography collection in their home, that in and of itself would be newsworthy to me.
You've got a federal felony.
Well, wait. The problem we have is, again, where did he get it, and who is it going to? Now, if that person turned out to be a professor at the university, and we found out that many of the photographs were of children under the age of 18 that he had access to, then I think we got a very good story.
Well, see, the interesting thing is, it's newsworthy if he's, for example, going around the neighborhood taking pictures of the local kids. That makes it newsworthy, but it's prosecution-worthy, even if these kids, the pictures were taken in Scandinavia in 1908.
True.
It's still a federal felony.
Absolutely.
That's the difference between the prosecutor and the journalist in this case.
It's a felony if it's just sitting on the hard drive?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Why?
Because possessing with the intent, if the person knows that these are, has reason to believe that these are photographs of people under the age of 18, mere possession is a federal felony.
There is an interstate commerce hook, but it is the loosest, easiest hook in the world. It's simply either the photographs themselves traveled in interstate commerce, or instrumentalities that were used to take the photographs traveled in interstate commerce. So,
since it's a computer, that would be very easy to make that hook, I think, in this case.
So what are you going to do?
Well, do you mean, am I going to call up Jonathan in his role as prosecutor and say, look what I just heard about? No.
Unlikely.
Pardon me?
I'd love it, but it wouldn't happen.
No, it would not happen. I think that I might want to find out more about it. So I think I have to find, perhaps, that old intern of mine and see what she can find out. I mean, maybe this is accessible very easily to almost anyone.
Oh, so you're ready to intrude on the system again?
Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe it's, I mean, maybe I have to truly intrude in the sense of hacking. Maybe all I have to do is just kind of go right in there and it's available. I mean, I think I need to know more than what the repairman just told me.
Okay, just to finish a thought you started, as a journalist, you're not going to call the prosecutor.
Nope.
Because that's not your job.
True.
You're not a citizen of the United States.
I am merely...
You're just a journalist.
I am merely an observer. I am no longer an advocate. The hardest lesson I have every day.
Now, would you call the university?
No, not at that point. If I decided that the way I wanted to make my story was to, if I couldn't get easy access to that computer, but I wanted to make the story the university's response to what my repairman, now my good friend, the repairman, had found, then I might call the university and say, hypothetically, what do you think if this is on a student's computer? And I might get my story that way.
Now, Declan, again.
Oh, Declan, is it you again?
I get around.
This is one of your classmates. You know he's got it. You know he's got it. What do you do? You're not bound by the alleged ethics of the journalist.
But... if I know he's got it, and or really have reason to believe that it's there, and it is some sort of kiddie porn, real child pornography, unlike some of the stuff that comes across, that some people might call child porn, then I'll tell the guy, get rid of this stuff. I don't know why you have it around. I don't want to know why you have it around, but it's just bad news. You're gonna be
It's bad stuff, Declan.
But, of course, Declan, he might be compelled in some way, psychologically or otherwise, to keep on obtaining this stuff. This may be a need he has. So how realistic is that? What have you done? You feel better for the moment.
It makes me feel better. You're absolutely right. But I don't know until I talk to him what if he has this need or if he had it on there as a joke or was just morphing pictures around to try. I don't know, and so I'll talk to the guy and say what the hell's going on here.
And he says to you, as you have said so many times this morning, get off my back. What do you do now?
I stop there.
Stop there?
My options are I can talk to the press, I can talk to the administration, or I can talk to the good guys over at the DOJ. I reject those options. I'm
Why?
Not going to do it.
You too are not a citizen.
Exactly. I'm not. It's their job to find out. And if the guy is doing anything harmful, he's going to be found out.
But often the only way to find out about things like that is for people to tell the FBI and tell the other members of law enforcement what's going on. If you believe what's going on is immoral and wrong and you know it's a crime, then I submit that it's your duty to tell, as a citizen, to tell people about what's going on.
If the photos are Harvey's, what Harvey mentioned is the 1908 photographs that aren't harming anyone now, these people are dead now. Mm-hmm. If no one's being harmed,
what about
necrophilia, huh?
Well, what about it?
So does it matter if he's going around the neighborhood taking pictures of the kids in the neighborhood?
Yep.
Does that matter to you? Well, where would you be pushed to become a rat?
Yeah, I mean, the photos, Declan, it turns out the photos are of the dead bodies that he's killed as a serial killer over a couple of years. He's got 7 dead bodies lined up. He's got photos. He's proud of them.
Everybody's the moderator.
And you
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Arthur.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, John.
And he says...
You're probably one of these horsemen again.
No, he says to you, and you say to him, don't do it. And he says, okay. You have an obligation. At what point do you have an obligation?
It's not my obligation to enforce the law unless there's immediate harm. Someone's being hurt right there. Don't criminalize this whole just having the photos. Your resources are better spent somewhere else. Criminalize using kids in a sexual situation.
Well,
criminalize the act.
Let me clarify something. So, you say it's not your job to enforce the law.
Generally, yes.
So, if we had someone beating up Ricky.
That's immediate harm. I can see it right before my eyes.
Oh, then you'd act.
Yes.
Then you'd act.
I would act, yep.
Now, what's the principle here, Declan, that you don't like the crime of beating up Ricky, but as far as you're concerned, kiddie porn is not a crime you give a fig about?
It's not something that's happening before my eyes. I don't know if he created these images on his computer. I'm not sure if he's...
I heard from the learned prosecutor that mere possession of this stuff is a crime. You are sitting there in his room, and he's showing it to you.
Jaywalking is a crime. Speeding is a crime. It's not my job to rat on everyone.
I think the distinctions between jaywalking and kiddie porn are too obvious to really even get involved in.
No, obscenity is a crime. If someone says this may be obscene and shows me pictures of bestiality and scat, do I have to turn them in? No.
But
there are pictures of your nephews and nieces. Does it make it more real for you?
Yeah, there's a fundamental difference here between generalized obscenity and child pornography, that they're real victims in this case. The people whose pictures that were the young boys, girls, whomever were posed, were set up. Those are the victims in that case. And child pornography has real victims.
Even if it's 1908?
Even if it's 1908.
In Scandinavia.
Even if it's 1908 in Scandinavia.
And I didn't even think that was a story.
Now, Harvey, suppose it isn't 1908 in Scandinavia. These are real kids from the environment outside the U.
Yes, well, you see, child abuse is a crime that I think most people would agree should be a crime. We should not confuse, however, having photographs in one's possession with the crime of child abuse. And that's the line I think has to be drawn.
Now, well spoken, but how do you deal with Peter's reference to the fact that kiddie porn is a crime?
Well, you didn't ask the question whether it's a crime. I said long ago that it's a crime. I agree it's a crime. There are a lot of us who question whether it should be to have merely possession of photographs which one did not take. You know, that is a crime, but it's controversial as to whether it should be a crime. Ironically, you know...
Beating blacks in the South was a controversial crime 50 years ago.
There is a Supreme Court opinion which makes it protected First Amendment activity to have something obscene, which is, you know, illegal material, in the privacy of one's living room. You know, if you want to read an obscene book, the government can't interfere with that. Nonetheless, if the book you're reading is child pornography, it is a crime. This is, by the way, Supreme Court, we pay justices to come up with these distinctions. And we do have, the society has a different attitude toward pictures of children than pictures of adults, even if they're doing the same thing. But there are those of us who believe that having mere pictures, no matter what the pictures are of, should not be a crime, which is why I tried to make the distinction between, did this person take the picture, in which case is abuse of a child involved, and that makes it, in more minds, a serious and report-worthy offense.
Suppose he didn't take the pictures, but he is transmitting the pictures to those who know how to reach his site.
The law says that that's a crime. And some of us would say that that's simply should be protected activity, but it's not. We haven't gotten there yet as a society.
Now, Mr.
University, matured yet.
If this comes to your attention, what do you do?
Two phone calls. First, I call general counsel and make sure that, in fact, I'm supposed to report a crime that I know about.
that's an above-the-radar type of crime.
You want to respond to the phone call?
And he's going to tell me, well, let's see what he says.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to ask you two questions. I'm going to say you're really asking two questions. What do I have to do and what can I do? Mm-hmm. What do I have to do? You don't have to report it. What can you do? You can report it. We get paid
see,
for
good
this.
Thing I called instead
That's
of
right.
making an assumption.
Sounds to me like a two-headed coin.
The second call is to the University Counseling Service because I want them to be ready to deal with somebody. Because mm-hmm. I think we have someone troubled here who's doing this. I guess in this case, I think I then need to make a third call, which is to the university police head, and say, I think we have a crime here. And I think it's her job, in fact, to worry about whether this is something that she wants to prosecute on behalf of the university or not. But I think at this point, I know something is there that's fairly clearly a crime, and I need to put it in the hands of who decides whether we prosecute things like that.
You say that if it's, as far as you can tell, mere possession, not transmission.
Well, this is part of why I called the council, is to find out this is the above-the-radar thing we keep going back. Is this an above-the-radar crime? This one feels like an above-the-radar crime to me. Mm. I mean, I don't know about these 1908 pictures and all that, and whether it's grainy and sepia and things like that. I'm, you know...
The other piece
you're
of
really living this, Greg, aren't you?
This isn't the first time this has happened.
The other question, though, is whether this computer that has this material on it is connected to the university system.
Well, it's in the repair service right now, so it's not.
I don't want to criticize, but I do think the advice that you don't have to report might leave you at risk for a misprision of a felony. Now, it's never charged, at least it was until the Daiwa Bank pled guilty to it recently, but you have information about a felony, and you may have an obligation under the law.
Well, that's part of why I want to dump it on my university police chief.
And I think
she understands better how to deal with that than I do, frankly.
And I think the fact that it's on a computer also raises the seriousness of the offense because of the fact this is not, you know, as Harvey was saying, this is not a book or was making a distinction with just mere possession versus transmission. And if it's just a book in somebody's possession, then it's just probably for the mere possession of it. But if it's on a computer, that certainly from that one can conclude that if it's not being transmitted, it certainly can be. And it makes it much, much more serious.
Well, it certainly was. It got there from someplace, unless it was a huge camera-equipped studio machine.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we're pointing out here the difference between the problems of a hard copy and computers. And, you know, why there's such a distinction, I don't know. I read, you know, the First Amendment seems to cover everything, but it apparently is different First Amendments. And in this instance, Jeff, who's advising, let's say, the university, wouldn't really be too concerned if a student had the child pornography in the room, wouldn't be concerned with the university's liability. Might say, yes, you can report this, it is a crime to just possess it. But he wouldn't really be too worried. But if he's suddenly told it's on the university computer system, he's going to freak out. He is going to think about advising the university that unless it does something, it could easily be held civilly liable and could even be held criminally liable if it knows it's on the system and doesn't do something to control it.
That's not unique to computers. If I was told that student also had 500 manila envelopes and a postage meter and a copy machine there, I'd be worried too.
Well, Declan, that email group, the university left you alone, and that hot links and lampooning, the university sort of left you alone, but they've now thinked you out. And you're off to jail, and I think the rest of us may just go to lunch. My thanks to the panel.